Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only. Devour the Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to episode 17 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, David, and with me as always is Jamie.
Hello.
And this week we are getting close to the end of our retrospective of the Sleepaway Camp franchise. We are covering Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor tonight, along with our It Came from the Instant Queue film, Slaughter Night. Next week, unfortunately, Mike from Corpse Cast will not be able to join us the finale of the Sleepaway Camp retrospective. Recording stuff came up, recording date got shifted, shit happens, you know, it happens. But next week, you'll still get the episode on next Saturday, as always, but it just will feature myself and Jamie instead of three of us, like I hoped for initially. But, you know, shit happens, no big deal.
Hopefully that'll be okay with everyone.
Yeah, it better be. Shit out of luck if it's not. And I actually did get in contact with Corey. Midnight Corey. He is also unavailable because he's doing something that Monday, but I will be joining Midnight Corey this Saturday for an upcoming episode of Electric Chair down the line at some point, so I'm looking forward to that. And if you are not subscribed to Electric Chair, you totally should be, because that show is fucking awesome.
Yeah, my episode, I was on Electric Chair. We talked about Troll Hunter, and that drops this coming Sunday.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, I was just listening to episode 4, about halfway through or so. I just got to their review of Innkeepers.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I haven't listened to all of it yet. I was listening to them chat about it, so I'm excited to listen to that. And I commented on his Facebook page, or the Electric Chair Facebook page, rather, that I really enjoyed the interviews he had with the authors. As an aspiring author, I love listening to people talk about writing, because it makes me feel less crazy when I think about writing, because they're saying a lot of the same shit that I say when I think about my writing. So it's like, oh, yay, I'm not crazy. So this is the weirdest intro ever. And I swear to God, so much of this crap's going to get edited out, because I'm just, you know, fucking scatterbrained as usual. Yeah. Is there anything you wanted to bring up prior to getting things going with our usual shenanigans?
Well, I would like to mention that if people want to hop over to the blog, then they can read the new information that I just posted about Viscera. We have the official lineup is set for this year's film festival that will be in LA in July.
Yep.
And all that information is at Devour the Blog.
Yes, that is. Right? That went up a couple days ago. I remembered that you sent me the press release like a week ago, I think. Something like that. And I was like, oh, great, we got to talk about this on the show. And then I remembered, wait a minute, I have a blog I can post this shit on.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know, last week was, it was kind of rough and shaky anyway,
yeah.
So it's okay.
Yeah, I listening back to that last week's episode while I was editing it, I was just so, ugh. I feel like the last 2 weeks of episodes have just been really bad going over the editing. Episode 16, there were some issues that I had with it. And then last week's episode, I was really unhappy with it. But, you know, coming into this episode, I was like, you know what? I feel better about everything. Everything's going to be fine. I feel rejuvenated and renewed, especially after watching our Instant Queue selection, which was fucking awesome. Can't wait to talk about that later.
I know!
So yes, devourtheblog.wordpress.com. Those of you who were listening to this show via that site, you will probably have already seen the Viscera press release that I posted up there with some pictures that were, I believe, in the email that you sent me. So I did that, and it was very, very fun to throw that together. Also, redesign on the blog. So if you like the redesign that I did, please let me know. I've tried it out because I was sick of the old design, and I like this one better because it has the banner images at the top. And if anybody's pointing out that the images don't change on their own, I know. I can't do anything about that. That's a custom HTML shit thing that costs money to change. I can't. As much as I love WordPress, I'm not paying to fucking fiddle with custom HTML. It's too much hassle.
So deal with it.
Yeah, pretty much. Just click the fucking pictures. It's okay. They're numbered, and it'll take you to that particular entry. That's all the promo pre-show bullshit I have for this week. Other than we're pretty much, I'd say, back to normal. Looking forward to this episode and future episodes. Once again, thank you to Mike from CorpseCast for hosting our shows. Much appreciated.
Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you.
We have a Facebook group now, which is going to be in the show notes because we don't have an official link for it yet. It's facebook.com/group/shitloadofnumbers. We don't have an official title for it yet. I don't know how to do that yet. I'll figure it out at some point. But that's in the show notes along with the Facebook page, which has like 36 likes now, which is awesome. And we're getting quite a few subscribers via the feed burner now. It's, I think last week's numbers were like 15 on average for the last 7 days. So that's pretty awesome. So thank you everybody who's listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And
you know, talk to us.
Yes.
Talk to us. Let us know you're out there. Let us know what's up. We love feedback.
We do. We are both very easily available on Facebook and Twitter.
Email.
which is in the show notes and also mentioned at the end of every episode. We actually had somebody post on the Devour the Blog Facebook page the other day about how they were really glad that they found that our show was still going after the shenanigans of last week. So that was very nice. And it was really weird because I was checking Facebook on my phone and it said that there was a comment, there was a response to a comment made on the thing. I was like, wait, I didn't make any comment. And I was like, oh, right, Jamie has administrative powers on the Facebook page.
That's right. And then, of course, which you would have figured out anyway, because I always sign my posts.
Exactly.
And so people know who they're talking to.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, things are going well and things are settling back down. I actually feel normal.
Yeah, last week was just, last week sucked. Lots of bullshit, lots of pointless drama. We are back. We are kicking. Before we jump into our news, I think I mentioned this on the blog, I know I mentioned it, I posted about it on the blog. I don't know if I've said it on air yet. In the coming weeks, more than likely, I'm going to try and coincide it with either the episode 20 or possibly episode 25. I will be beginning to release a series on the Devour the Blog page about my history of podcasting, sort of an on-podcasting series of articles that I've started to write twice now. There's two different versions I started handwriting, and I will eventually start typing them out. It's pretty much as brutally honest and straightforward as I can possibly be about my history of podcasting from the beginnings of my podcasting career to now. And I will be including a tutorial on how to start your own podcast if you are so inclined. So hopefully you guys will check that out and enjoy it. Try to make it as entertaining as possible, but I can't.
I want to read it. I do. You'll have at least one.
Yeah, that's about it for intro stuff that I can think of. I think we covered everything with the press release that is up there. There's the upcoming feature on podcasting. We'll have Mike on the show at some point. We'll have Corey on the show at some point as well. Really looking forward to talking to Corey this weekend. And yeah, next week is the end of our Sleepaway Camp retrospective. And for anybody wondering, we're not going to jump into another retrospective right away. We'll probably be switching gears into random movies for maybe a month or so. We'll see how it goes. Just because this fucking retrospective has been a nightmare.
I mean, it really is. It really is a lot of work to
yeah,
go through this many. But it's been fun.
It has been fun. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. But it's one of those things where it's like you don't... It seems like such a great idea when you start out. It's like, oh, we're going to talk about this whole series of movies. And then by about the third week of doing it, you're like, fuck, I'm so sick of watching these movies now.
Right, yeah.
Which is why I'm really glad we picked it. I picked a short series to start out with because Sleepaway Camp is only 5 movies long and it's, you know, it goes by really quickly. I think our first retrospective we tried to do on the last show was we tried to do the Tomy series from Japan. And oh. I think we got through maybe the second. No, we watched the first one. And then I got through maybe half of the second movie and then never finished the series because we're just like, ugh.
Well, you still haven't done Paranormal Activity 3.
Oh, like you were supposed to be working on that.
Oh, you know, also, I am now co-hosting Evil Episodes.
Oh, that's right.
So, and you will be on that show at some point.
Yes, I will be on, on here at some point.
Yeah, so if you, and Mike is a great guy, and that show we talk about video games, TV, horror TV, whatever. So if you can't get enough of me here, then you can find more of me there. And that's, you just go to evilepisodes.com and check it out. I got a fancy new bio and pick up there and everything under Meet the Staff. So awesome. That's kind of fun.
I'll have to, I will add a link to the show notes for that show, as well as Electric Chair and Corpse Cast and everything else we need to cover in, or that we've covered in this show. All right, this intro is running on for fucking ever, so let's just get on with the news.
Okay.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
All right, let's jump into the news. All of our news today came from horrormovies.ca. First off, IFC acquires U.S. rights to Sightseers. Ben Wheatley's latest flick, Sightseers, is quickly making headway, what with photos and clips, and now we have word that the film has been acquired for U.S. distribution. According to Yahoo Movies, IFC Films has acquired the North American rights to Sightseers. And they say, we've been looking for a comedy as original and hilarious as our past successes in The Loop and The Trip, and we are thrilled to say we have found it in Sightseers. And that came from the president of IFC Sundance. Okay, and the film stars Steve Oram and Alice Lowe. And here be your synopsis. Chris, Steve Oram, wants to show Tina, Alice Lowe, his world, and he wants to do it his way on a journey through this sceptered isle in his beloved Abbey Oxford caravan. Tina's led a sheltered life, and there are things that Chris needs her to see. The Crike Tramway Museum, the Ribblehead Viaduct, the Keswick Pencil Museum, oh man, I'm all about the Pencil Museum, and the rolling countryside that separates these wonders in his life. But it doesn't take long for the dream to fade. Litter bugs, noisy teenagers, and pre-booked caravan sites, not to mention Tina's meddling mother, soon conspire to shatter Chris's dreams and send him and anyone who rubs him the wrong way over a very jagged edge. And for more information about that, you can check out their official Facebook page. The link, of course, will be in the show notes. So that sounds like it could be. You know what? I like the idea behind this, that everyday annoyances, you know, like litter bugs, noisy teenagers, all this stuff, are going to send him over the edge. Yeah. I kind of like those everyman problems. Sort of like falling down.
Oh my! I was about to say that. I fucking love that movie.
I do too. I really do love that movie, and it's really intense. And of course, you know, over the, you know, he goes way off the deep end.
Yeah.
But there are so many things in there that you're like, yes, I know. And like, you're just not crazy enough to flip out over it.
Yeah.
He has some problems anyway.
If anybody hasn't seen Falling Down with Douglas. Michael Douglas. Jesus Christ. I always get the father and son mixed up. It's absolutely amazing. It's from, I want to say 92? 91,
I think.
Oh, 91. Okay. Fantastic fucking movie. It's about this guy.
Oh, and Robert Duvall.
Oh, that's right. It's about this guy who is stuck in traffic, and he just snaps. Everything in his life is falling apart, and he gets stuck in traffic, and he just fucking snaps, and it follows him as he goes through. I think he's going to like his son's birthday or something, or he's going to pick up his son from his ex-wife or something, and just this kaleidoscope of psychotic violence and lunacy that takes place, and it's fucking dead serious, but fucking brilliant movie.
Yeah, it is extremely well acted by Michael Douglas, and it's his daughter, by the way. But
I couldn't remember.
There are some really, really fantastic characters. You know, Robert Duvall plays this detective who it's his last day on the job before he retires.
Right.
You know, and last days are always bad.
Yeah.
And Frederick Forrest delivers an amazing performance as this asshole, you know, Army Navy store owner.
Oh, that's
who
right.
Is just. He's like this just raging bigot,
yeah.
And he's full of hate for everything, from gay people to foreign people to whatever. I mean, he just hates everything and he's an asshole. Yeah. And you really don't like this guy, but his performance is incredible. Yeah. And it's just, if you haven't seen that, I definitely recommend checking that out, because I love that movie. But
I think it's on Netflix Instant Watch, so definitely cool. it's fucking worth it. It's amazing. I was blown away when I saw it. But this does sound like it might be kind of cool.
Yeah, only a comedic version.
Yeah.
Of, you know, someone flying off the handle.
Yeah, and I seem to think there was a movie kind of similar to that, but or similar to this style of somebody losing their shit in a comedic way. But I'm interested to see this when it comes out.
So am I. Because Lord knows I have my own issues. I used to write on my blog. I used to write just like whatever, you know, bothered me. I did a series. One was elevator etiquette. I can go all into this stuff. Actually, if you want to go into it for yourself, you can check it out. It's still around. I just don't post very often, but it's out there. Okay. The Shambler is out for revenge. According to Variety, writers Bob Layton and David Michelinie are working on bringing their comic book The Shambler to the big screen. The film is being reported as an action horror comedy, which is being budgeted at $4 million. Comic book synopsis: Dr. Samuel Pratt is a multi-doctorate scientist who is obsessed with raising the dead, but just as Sam is about to perfect his colossal breakthrough, an unfortunate series of circumstances puts him in conflict with organized crime. The mobsters kill Sam and take off with his irreplaceable research, hoping to sell the secret of immortality to the highest bidder. Pratt's desperate fiancé and his shady lab assistants use the remaining prototype formula to bring him back to life. Humor mixes with horror as Pratt is resurrected and mummified, wrapped in police scene crime tape, and out for revenge against the criminals who destroyed his life work. But time is against him. Sam must find a way to restore himself to true life before he degenerates into a mindless killing machine, the hulking anti-hero who lurks in the shadows of LA's underbelly, which the tabloids have dubbed Shambler. That sounds really fun.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Dead Heat in a way. Did you ever see that?
I have not.
That's a fun movie. It's totally a comedy, but it's a buddy cop movie with Treat Williams and what's his face? The comedian that was from Saturday Night Live. I'm so sorry. I can't remember your name, guy.
That describes a lot of people.
I know. You know, the comedian from Saturday Night Live.
That one guy.
Talking about
the guy with the face and the hair.
Guy, he was really muscular, but I cannot remember.
I think I know who you mean. I think it's on Netflix Instant Watch.
Anyway, it's fun. It's sort of a zombie movie, but cop zombie movie kind of thing. And basically, they have a limited amount of time to hunt down the people who have caused them to be in the situation they're in. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then kind of bits of this also remind me of Reanimator, you know, just reading this synopsis. That's the first thing that popped into my head. So that sounds interesting.
The link to the website is in the show notes, but I put the actual first issue cover on the Devour the Blog site. It's actually kind of cool seeing what this character looks like as a mummy wrapped up in police crime scene tape.
That, I think, is the funniest part.
Yeah. It looks pretty awesome, and I think that it could be... Yeah, if they can pull it off, I think it'll be kind of cool. It'll be like how in Kick-Ass the character looks a certain way in the comics, and then when they translate it to the movie, it looked just absolutely spot on. I think if they do something similar, it could be really funny. So we'll have to wait and see when that one comes out. And a $4 million budget is pretty good. I mean, obviously, it doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it's fucking $4 million. You can do a lot with $4 million.
You can, which really always makes me wonder, what the hell are all these people spending all these hundreds of millions of dollars on?
Marketing.
And, you know, yeah. They have to pay for the press junkets.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, you know, I guess that's true. A lot of the money does go to marketing, because if you don't market your movie, then people won't see it.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, we see that happen to a lot of smaller budget movies all the time. They don't get seen because they can't afford to get the word out there. Yeah. So, but yeah, it you can do a lot with $4 million, especially if you're creative. And I think crime scene tape is one really creative way to use it. Mm-hmm. So that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, next. We could have a mystery in the works here.
Yes.
Chernobyl Diaries. Stolen concept, or parallel thinking. I will give you guys the information and then you decide. But in 2009, filmmakers Nick Gardner and Jeremy Morrison of the History Channel's Rome, Rise and Fall of an Empire began discussing plans for an independent feature film project. The story takes place in the city of Pripyat, just outside Chernobyl. Along with historical archival footage, they produced and shot several key shots to flesh out a viable teaser trailer to use for fundraising. The trailer was finished in 2010. Without their consent, the trailer was pitched to several movie studios and producers in New York and Los Angeles. It is unclear exactly who saw the materials, but what is clear are the similarities between their Pripyat trailer and the trailer for Chernobyl Diaries. Several key story elements also appear to be lifted directly from their original project package. Gardner and Morrison have decided to release their trailer and let the public decide if this is too much of a coincidence or not. You can watch the comparison video and judge for yourself. And they have a Facebook page that you can go to for more information. Mm-hmm. Of course, that link will be available for you to check out.
Yes.
But this is really intriguing.
Along with the video, which I did watch the video because I've been Chernobyl as an event. It's a horrible event that happened. For those of you who don't know, it was 1986, 87, 88, something like that. It was the late 80s. Chernobyl was a nuclear power plant in Russia that went critical and melted down. And Pripyat, the town just outside of the plant is completely desolate now, completely empty. And it's really fucking creepy. If you look up pictures of Chernobyl, Pripyat and Chernobyl, it is fucking eerie how empty the place is, because it's the closest I think we'll ever get to what the apocalypse would look like.
Oh yeah, I mean everything just sort of stopped dead in its tracks.
And it
you know, people left their stuff where it was, mm-hmm. and took off and never went back.
Yeah, there's still, you know, there's still the Soviet propaganda and the communist stuff is up, and it's just it's creepy as hell. And
they have a huge colony of cats that live there.
Yeah. So when I saw the initial TV spot for Chernobyl Diaries, I was like, this looks like it might be interesting, but I don't necessarily like the idea that it's by the director of Paranormal Activity, because I fucking hated those movies. And if you listen to those first couple episodes where I did those movies, you know how much I fucking hate those movies. So it had that going against it. And then when I watched this trailer for the Pripyat movie, I gotta say, this is definitely, it looks a little suspicious. It's one of those things where it's like, you could say, okay, well, yes. In the one case, they both use archival footage, and they show those two moments back to back of the Pripyat trailer and then the Chernobyl Diaries trailer. And in that case, you can sort of say, well, what are they gonna do? I mean, there's only so much archival news footage of the event that you can use. But there are some shots that are just literally completely just like ripped from that Pripyat trailer, and so I can't say one way or another if Chernobyl Diaries did rip this off, but personally I wouldn't be surprised at all. It looks a little too suspicious to me, but then again, why is this news coming out just now, you know, when we're getting this close to the Chernobyl Diaries being released? Why didn't they, you know, bring this up sooner? But
that's a good question. That's because this movie has been talked about for quite a while. So, you know, there has been plenty of time to bring this up before now, but, you know, I guess, you know, they're just putting it out there so people can make their own decision, I guess, and you can hop over to the Facebook page and, I guess, probably weigh in, even. I'm not sure if they have comments, like, if they're allowing comments, but I imagine they would.
The little bit I saw of their Facebook page is very, it's kind of empty. There's not a whole, doesn't seem like be a whole lot going on there. As I said, I've got the Devour the Blog version of the show notes. Will have the actual video trailer posted. The version that you who download this through iTunes, et cetera, will have the link to the video if you want to check it out. But the Facebook page doesn't have a whole lot to it that I noticed. I'm interested to see where this goes. Like I said, I'm a little wary of Chernobyl Diaries just on the basis of I don't like the director, and I'm kind of have a bad feeling about this one, but who knows?
I have one final news item, and that is Behold Dracula, the Four Horsemen. And according to Hollywood Reporter, Crystal Sky will begin production this summer in Romania on Perry Reginald Teo's Necromentia of Necromancia. Dracula, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. The film is said to be the first installment in a franchise about a young romantic prince of darkness, his army of the undead, and a series of events that shake Transylvania to its core. And discuss.
I have no idea what to think about that at all. It could be good, but that's a really bad synopsis to be giving out for a movie. It's like, oh, hey, Dracula and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. What?
I know, it sounds like some really messed up old Universal mashup.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. It's Dracula meets the Four Horsemen.
Yeah. It's like, what?
And Abbott and Costello.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great. And it's, I don't know if they, and it's really vague. It's not clear if we're talking about Dracula as the vampire character Dracula, or are we talking about Vlad the Impaler, you know, and the whole, and that's kind of why the whole, like, the thing about the young romantic prince, it makes me think that maybe they're talking about Vlad, but I don't.
And his army of the undead. What, yeah, I assume they're referring to vampires.
That's why it's like, okay, so are we talking about vampires or what are we doing here? This is not, I don't know. I'll wait and see.
Talking about deadites?
Yeah, we'll see what happens and maybe it won't suck, but who knows.
Okay, well, that is it for the news.
So with that, we will be right back after we get through our coming soon for next week, and we will be back with Slaughter Night.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
Before I came from the instant queue, we'll be reviewing the 1981 film Hell Night.
Welcome to Garth Manor. In order to be a member of Alpha Sigma Rho, one has to do what?
To stay in Garth Manor one night.
And why is this night so special?
Because 12 years ago, Raymond Garth murdered his family here and then committed suicide.
And when the police arrived, they discovered a note written by Raymond Garth describing the entire gruesome act. But strangely, they only discovered three dead bodies. Andrew is still believed by some to be living somewhere within this house.
Hey, let's party! Quaaludes and Jack Daniels.
Oh my gosh. This is one radical chick. All right! Now the fun begins.
Hey!
Robin Hood to the rescue! Woohoo! Come here, little...
Peter, is that you? Cut the bullshit, Peter.
This is supposed to be a joke. I can't believe it.
What about Seth? Seth is bringing back help.
Seth isn't coming back.
Well, then we'll wait. Wait until morning, and Peter and the other kids will be here.
Peter's dead.
Well. Maybe there are more guards. Maybe Seth.
Pray for day. Hell night.
For our feature presentation, we'll be watching the 2008 film Return to Sleepaway Camp.
Come on, look who's here. Camp Problem Child.
Hey, what's up, Alan?
Shut up, doofus!
Hey!
Thanks, PB!
Eat this, you fat shit!
You puss bag!
Down, girl, down, girl. Easy, easy.
Get back to your cabin.
Don't touch me!
You don't talk back to me, young man. I'm not one of these little boys you can push around.
Hey, boy.
You better not break my lighter, Alan.
Oh, yeah? What are you gonna do? Piss on me like you do to your bed every night?
Just ignore him, okay? I don't want him coming over here.
I love Alan.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Hey, dickwad. What's that on your shirt?
What? What a dude.
Good shot, Ella.
Wow, you must have some pair of balls.
Oh, no! How could you, you fuck?
Kiss my ass, sick boy.
Don't say that!
Shut up,
dude!
Fucking shut up! Leave me alone!
Away from him,
Gusty! Get away from me!
You're a monster!
This is so bad.
I don't understand why you're freaking out, Karen. Did you see the look on his face? He's crazy, Marie!
No! Oh, no!
Er liggen nog allemaal spullen van papa in België. Iemand moet ze halen.
Moeten we mee?
Nee, we moeten het even alleen doen.
U kunt met de tour mee door de mijn. Interessant, hoor.
Dames en heren, wij bevinden ons hier op 60 meter onder de grond. Het is hier een compleet labyrinth. Dus als je hier verdwaalt, dan crepeert je.
Hallo?
Ik zie dingen. Wat voor dingen?
We gaan geesten oproepen.
Is er iemand die met ons wil praten? Is er iemand die met ons wil praten? Wil je met ons praten?
Ik weet niet wat hier aan de hand is.
Fucking hell!
Schuld is. En our It Came From The Instant Queue this week is the Belgian-Dutch production Slaughter Night, or Slaknacht, from 2006. This was written and directed by Frank van Geloven and Edwin Visser. And I'm going to apologize right now because I'm probably going to butcher these names because they are Dutch and I don't speak Dutch or know how to pronounce it properly. So, Victoria Koblenko is Crystal Ledema. Kurt Rogers is Mark. Jop Joris is Paul. Linda van der Steen is Estrald. Steve Hui is Rude. And Carolina Dijahuizen is Lisabeth. I think that was Lisa, is who she was referred to in the movie. Synopsis via Netflix, because IMDb did not have a synopsis. A group of friends venture into a mine where convicted killers were once forced to off themselves in this award-winning Dutch horror film. Shaken by her father's death, teen Crystal, Victoria, travels to the mine to retrieve his things. Unaware that the mine company once sent convicts to their death by making them ignite gas leaks, the friends unwittingly disturb the spirit of a killer who seizes the chance to kill again after 100 years. This was
this was
a surprise, I have to admit.
This is so fun.
Yeah, the cover art on Netflix does not do this any justice. It also does not let on this is not in English. So for those of you who don't like foreign films or don't like subtitled movies, you're shit out of luck. But this was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good.
I never knew what I was in for at any point in this movie or what was going to happen next. I mean, within the first minute and 15 seconds. And I remember timing it because I paused the movie just for this reason. As they're introducing the backstory of Martins, the criminal who killed children, they go through the little thing and they show him kidnapping this girl. And then I swear to God, it's like minute 15 into the movie. He fucking decapitates a kid. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I was sucked in from the very beginning. You get to know the characters and you get a little backstory and of course the main girl and it's just subtle little things like at her dad's funeral when the ribbon was folded and it looked like it said Slacht. But, you know, which means slaughter. So, and she's like, oh, but then like you unfolded it and it actually said, you know, sleep tight, which is kind of a sweet sentiment.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny that this movie is two Americans. It looks like Slate Nate because it's S-L-8-N-8.
I saw that when the movie started. I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then as the movie goes on and you realize they actually say number 8 and it's Ock. And I was like, oh, that makes sense now. Because, you know.
Slack. Yeah. So if you speak Dutch, then you would have gotten that already.
You know, we're American, so we're a little slow on the uptake.
It makes sense. And the gore. Surprising. It was so surprising, but a pleasant surprise. A pleasant surprise. I was not expecting as much as we got. But it was well done. It wasn't cheap. Mm-hmm. It didn't at all feel out of place or that it was.
Felt really
yeah
really natural.
I mean it was totally I love referring to gore as natural but it was, you know, it didn't feel like it was forced. Mm-hmm. It was just there for you to enjoy if you know you like that sort of thing. And fans of My Bloody Valentine will probably be you'll be reminded of that frequently throughout because it does just like take place in a mine.
I have to say that opening sequence was really I really liked that they had that historical opening sequence with that was really cool because it like all these, you know, they're all in period outfits and they've got, you know, flintlocks and all that. And that was just a really cool sequence. And I know I just mentioned this in the news, how much I hate shaky cam. The shaky cam that's used in this movie is used sparingly and in scenes where it's really effective.
Right. Because it's not all first person. No. That's what I mean. There are some first person shots because they, you know, as they're going through their tour or whatever, these kids are like on a basically it's like a road trip to all of them except for Crystal, you know, who has a reason for being there. So there are some shots that you see through their personal video camera. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it just adds to the effect.
Yeah.
But the majority of the film is, you know, third
very
person.
Very straightforward. Yeah. Very straightforward. Third person.
And very well shot, yeah. I think. It looks beautiful.
And that was the thing that in that opening sequence when they're chasing down Martin, when they're attacking him, the camera starts shaking and it's very, you know, very visceral and very in your face. And it really works perfectly there because that's the type of scenes you should be using shaky cam for. It's one of those things where it's like, you look at Saving Private Ryan, which kind of, I blame Spielberg because he basically brought shaky cam into effect for that reason, or in that style of let's shake the camera to make things more intense to, you know, really draw the viewer into the chaos of what's happening. That works really well in this movie because you've got that scene where the police are apprehending Martin and the camera's shaking because they're beating the fuck out of him with their rifles and such. There's some scenes some fighting moment scenes in this later on in the movie where the camera is shaking again. And it's, again, when you're in a really tight corridor, this movie is all basically almost all completely takes place in a mine. It's very tight and constricted. So having the scenes where the camera is shaking as people are fighting makes it much more intense, which I really liked.
Yeah. What I said last night, when I was watching this, is that it sort of reminded me of a cross between My Bloody Valentine and Fallen. And really only Fallen when there's a supernatural element that is introduced.
Yes.
And when that is introduced, it reminds me of that. But you know, you watch the movie and you'll probably understand why I say that, but, I'm not going to give anything away, but I found, okay. I was watching this with a friend and there was a lot of this going on. Oh, oh. Oh, yes. You know, and she's like, wow, this is really gory. I like it.
It's one of those where I feel like there are things I could nitpick about, but there's really nothing nothing I can nitpick about is really a negative. I mean, the shaky cam in some cases felt a little unnatural and a little overused. And really the only thing I can complain about is the fade to black transitions. And most of the time it was fine because it was a quick fade in and fade out into the next shot.
But sometimes it looked like you were going to a commercial
break.
That's
exactly what I was about to say. That's what was driving me fucking crazy. I was like,
I'm like, wait, are we having a commercial?
Yeah. Because it was just such a weird, like, that transition was too long. And it's like when it was just, you know, fade out on one hallway, fade into the next hallway, that was fine. But you take that extra couple of seconds to fade on the black fading, it's just like, fuck, why are we going to commercial?
And it seems like it takes forever, even though it's really just a matter of seconds. Yeah. It just slows
things down just enough to be a little annoying.
And just enough to pull you out of it. You know, it you write out because you notice it. Mm-hmm. It's just all it is a black screen, but you notice it, that it's there too long. And I'm glad you brought that up because I had forgotten about that, but that is definitely a point that I would make. But I really can't think of anything I want to complain about, though, honestly. Other than that, it just, I got nothing.
That honestly for me was the major negative of the film, was just those weird long commercial break like transitions, which like you said, honestly probably only 4 or 5 seconds long at a time, but it's just enough time to take you out of what's going on, because when they're transitioning from, you know, one hallway shot to another, it's seamless. It's just like boom, boom. With this one, it's, we give that little bit of breathing space and it's just like, oh god damn it, now I'm out of the movie. And it's like, okay, now we're back. And it's like, fuck, don't do that to me.
And I think it was twice that happened, at least. I recall distinctly two times. I don't know if there were more than that.
And it was weird because it happened towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, so it came out of nowhere. Yeah. It's not like it was happening the whole time. Yeah. I don't know if it was, you know, an editing glitch, you know, if it was something that was overlooked or if it was intended. I cannot think of why, you know. But, you know, it's forgivable because
the rest of the movies.
I mean, I love the history behind that you learn about the miners and you know what all they went through. And we actually get to go on the tour with them pretty much.
Really, really,
that was really fun. And then, you know, how about how they used prisoners and you know, prisoners that were on death row
to
go down and explode the methane so that it would be safe for the miners. If they survived it, then they were set free. Which reminded me of when I was little and my grandfather told me that if you were sentenced to hang, but you survived the hanging, then they would let you go, you know, and which is why then a lot of places put in the phrase, that they sentenced you to be hanged by the neck until you were dead, because they were making sure that you didn't have a loophole to get out of it.
Right.
And that I thought was sort of an interesting little bit of history in there. And it was, you know, it was really fun. I love the backstory of this, and they put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, and like I said, this is a movie that I felt like I never knew what was coming next or what was going to happen next. Because when we open it up, we have that great opening of the set in the past where we're introduced to Martins and those fantastic skull shots of the decapitated children. And then we jump to the present and, you know, we have the club scene. And the first thought that popped in my head was, God damn, Europe and its fucking terrible techno, I swear to God.
I got enough of that in Hostel.
Yeah, I know, right?
And Touristas.
Oh, which I never saw.
Don't worry. It's okay. Trust me.
The one scene I think at the very beginning that really just took me completely by surprise was when the car accident with Crystal and her dad. Because it's so, you see it coming.
And there's nothing you can
exactly. It's one of those things where it's like in another movie, it's been done before in other movies where, you know, we're in a car with characters who are about to get sideswiped. And it's usually like a split second thing that you don't see happening. This one, you see it coming. You see him, he keeps turning and talking to her. And as you see on the side, you see this fucking truck coming and you're just like, oh, fuck. And sure enough, it's a great, great scene. Just excellently shot, perfectly executed. Just honestly, one of the best big effects of the movie for me, which is that opening. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was good. I always loved that sort of thing. The first film I can think of that where I remember seeing that done extremely well was in the Forgotten, the Julianne Moore movie from several years ago. I remember I was sitting in the theater watching that movie and you saw this truck coming from probably a half a block away. I mean, you got a really good shot of it coming straight for the car, straight for the passenger side. And there is nothing, not a damn thing you can do about it. It's going to happen and they are completely unaware. And then it just sort of plows into the side. And I remember thinking, damn, seeing it coming is so much worse than it being a surprise, you know, and it was done so well in that. And that scene has stuck with me all these years. And I think that of course, it's been done many times since then, some more effective than others. This one was extraordinarily effective, too. And the descent did a good job.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this movie is full of stuff like that. You know, it's just. They don't always go where you expect them to go, and they don't always go for the cliche, you know, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they took the time to stop and think, this is what they're going to expect us to do, so we're going to do something else. And not always. I mean, sometimes you can see it coming because it is basically a slasher, you know. It's like. You've got the elements there, but then you also have, I mean, you have all these different characters, but you don't have those typical slasher characters, you know, that we in our American films always have. You know, you do have several girls and several guys, and there's one guy who's, you know, he's taken some ecstasy and he's given some ecstasy. And then there's the guy that sort of emerges as kind of like a heroic leader. And then there's, you know, right. And I loved his character, by the way.
I liked all the characters, actually.
I did. Even Paul, who at one point you think is going to be this biggest asshole, and you're just like, God, you're a jerk, you know, redeems himself, and you end up just like, oh, God, I love him anyway. Yeah. And you like them and you care about them. And I genuinely felt for them.
Yeah, that was,
you know, in this situation.
That was definitely something that came across, was that all of the characters, they felt realistic, they felt natural, they felt like people. You cared about all of them. And it's one of those things where I can understand where some people would say, oh, the language barrier. Yes, they're speaking a different language. And that does kind of factor in when you're trying to review a foreign film. It's like, well, I can't really say if this person is a good actor or not, because... You know, I don't speak the language, so I don't have the necessary. I can't necessarily, you know, pick out if they're either inflection,
flubbing their lines or whatever. Yeah.
But I think in a sense that foreign films actually succeed much better than you know, American films in this case, is that I don't know who any of these people are. I've never seen any of these actors in anything before. So they are these characters to me. Whereas if I'm watching an American film, if I recognize the actor, oh, that's so-and-so from this, that takes me out of it. This one, I have no idea who any of these people are, but they all come across as being genuine, and their characters make sense the way they're acting and the way the subtitles are portraying the story to me.
Well, we're talking about a foreign horror film. I think it's warranted. Yes. But you want to get to the nitty-gritty on this one?
Yes.
I think you know what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I would say that the only real complaint I have, like I said previously, was the weird transitions towards the end. Shaky cam, they could have slowed it down in a few scenes. They didn't necessarily shake it up as much as they did. I would have liked if they had maybe taken a little bit of the fuzz filter off of the sepia tone flashback sequences in the middle of the film.
They were a little
too fuzzy to see what was really going on. I mean, I get what they were trying to do, and it worked, but it was a little hard to see what was actually happening. So that was...
No, you're absolutely right about that.
Bothersome.
I did note too.
But...
It was a little heavy
and
difficult to... It was just... If it just been just a little bit... More defined.
Yeah, and like honestly, these are just minor gripes, minor nitpicks, because honestly, this is a 5-star movie for me. This was absolutely brilliant. I loved every minute of it, and this week we're starting with a new rating system. I know you're probably all confused because we just started a new rating system not too long ago, but...
But we don't like it.
Yes. Insecure movies will continue to be 0 to 5, just because that's the Netflix way of doing it, and that's what we have. Well, Netflix is 1 to 5. We added the 0 because some movies deserve zeros. And feature presentations will be more of... Well, we're going to ditch the number rankings for those and go with avoid, watch it on cable, rent it, buy it, and then we'll come up with something that's a perfect film. But we'll come up with that later. But for me, Slaughter Night was a 5 out of 5. This is absolutely fantastic. Great special effects. Very few digital effects, thank God. And when they are used, they are, they're not really bothersome. Great story. I loved the characters, loved the effects, loved the setting. Just fantastic movie. This movie was the redeeming value of this episode for me, because when we get to the next movie, it's all downhill from there. But Slaughter Night, totally worth your time. It's about an hour and a half.
Yeah, right at. I think it's 129. Mm-hmm.
It is slow. It does take a while to get going, but it's not a bad kind of slow. I mean, I was about half an hour in, and nothing had really happened yet, but I was still super engaged. This movie takes its time, and it's paced differently than an American film, but it works because it's giving you a lot of story and a lot of stuff, getting you drawn in so that when the horror stuff actually does start to happen, it's awesome. So, like I said, 5 out of 5 for me. Highly recommend this. Definitely check it out. It is available on Instant Watch. And yeah, it is subtitled, so if you don't like subtitles, you're shit out of luck. But if you don't mind subtitles, absolutely recommend this.
Yeah, if you don't like subtitles, you better hope you speak Dutch. But I'm right there. As soon as this movie was over, I moused over and immediately clicked the 5 out of 5 stars. Loved it. And I'm very saddened that IMDb has a 6.3 out of 10 rating. Yeah. That breaks my heart. But it's everything you said, and more. I really, we could nitpick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. But yeah. I don't really care. I don't want to. It's like you're so engaged, you're so into it that those little things, we point them out because
we notice them.
That's what we do. But it does not detract from my enjoyment of the film
at all.
I don't think it did yours either. And and like you said, the beginning, it's a little slower paced, not boring slow. It is definitely engaging. And then once you get on, it's like you jumped in the minecart and went, think like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. You're riding the minecart. That's what it feels like, because you were just there. You're on for the ride, and you're sucked in, and it's amazing. So,
like I said, the practical effects are fantastic. There is a decapitation scene that I was just like, holy shit, that is awesome.
Oh, yeah. I told you I watched this with a friend, and we were both just, we were yelling all over the place. And after it was over, I walked in like, baby, you missed a good movie. And he's like, so I heard, And at one point I'm like, you might even know what I'm talking about. When I was talking to one of the characters, I'm like, roll away, roll away, roll away, roll away. He wouldn't get away. Yeah. And I was just like, get out of the way. It involved a chain link fence, I'll say. But I can't even say enough good things about this. So please, please, please give it a watch. And I've found most horror fans to be at least tolerant of subtitles. If not, I personally love foreign films, so it doesn't matter to me. But I generally find that people who are in search of good movie are at least tolerant of them. So if you are, then I encourage you to check it out.
Alrighty. So with that, we are finished with our It Came From the Instant Queue, and we will be jumping into our feature presentation, the Lost Sleepaway Camp sequel, Sleepaway Camp 4, The Survivor.
And now our feature presentation.
From Grindhouse editor Jim Markovic, Sleepaway Camp 4, The Survivor, the long-lost sequel. reconstructed from archive footage and released from the vault. Relive the original nightmare. Sleepaway Camp 4, The Survivor.
So, our feature presentation this week is the Lost Sleepaway Camp sequel, Sleepaway Camp 4, The Survivor. And the synopsis, and this is from 1992/2012. It was directed by Jim Markovic, written by Tom Closey. Stars Carrie Chambers as Allison, John Lodico as Jack, and John Gallagher as Eugene. And the synopsis is, Allison suffers recurring nightmares and an amnesia preventing her from remembering the past. She returns to camp to discover the secrets, but when everyone that crosses her winds up dead, the question arises, is she Angela Baker or is she being stalked? A shock awaits. We're not going to put a spoiler tag on this one because fuck that. There's nothing to spoil.
There's
in this
nothing
movie.
To spoil.
Yeah.
And that synopsis is bullshit.
Okay, so I think most Sleepaway Camp fans probably already know the history of this movie. If you've never heard of this movie or you don't have the box set, Sleepaway Camp 4 The Survivor was initially supposed to be released in like 92, 93. There was about a half an hour of footage, raw footage available, and made available in 2002 as the Sleepaway Camp box set bonus disc. And that was footage that was shot the first day to put together kind of a business trailer to try and get money to complete the project. The synopsis I just read, it's from the breakdown of what the movie was supposed to be about, kind of what went with the packaging to, you know, kind of sell this movie. Well, as it turns out, the film never found financing. It was never completed. Roll out to 2002, the footage is found. This half hour of footage is found and put on disc along with its trailer, and it's added as the fourth disc of the Sleepaway Camp box set, and that's all we had for The Survivor. That was it. That, some pictures, and a promotional poster. That's all we had. Well, this year, I want to say it was partially the webmaster of sleepawaycampfilms.com was involved with getting this project completed, I think. I don't know exactly who all was behind it, but somebody thought it'd be a great idea to finally, you know, bring this lost Sleepaway Camp film back. And yeah. And having read if you read the breakdown, it is very clear that there were supposed to be more scenes, and that there was going to be, if this was going to be reliant on footage from the first three films. However, Sleepaway Camp 4 The Survivor that is available now on DVD and available for rental via Amazon is a clusterfuck. I said on Twitter after I finished watching this that everyone who is involved with producing this should be fucking ashamed of themselves, because this is a terrible cash grab and as a slap in the face to the fans. This is fucking terrible.
You know, how much love does it take to slap together random scenes? And I say random on purpose because there were really a nosensical order. It didn't flow. There was no, it just wasn't logical. But it was just random scenes from the first three films with, I don't even know how much, but it felt like 7 minutes maybe of shitty wraparound footage that was just shitty. I mean, it was basically the quality of bad 90s porn. And, if you really loved these films, you wouldn't do that to it is all I have to say. I mean, it doesn't speak love to me. It's torture, and torture for the fans who want to watch it.
Yeah, the only nice thing I can say about this is that I can see that probably this was in somebody, you know, somebody thought this was a good idea. Somebody thought that they were doing the right thing for the fans. However, I watched this after having read the breakdown, so I had a vague idea of what was supposed to be going on. I can completely understand what you're saying about it being random scenes thrown together randomly, because without that, having read that breakdown and having the general idea of what the flow of the movie was supposed to be, it makes no fucking sense. There's some bad voiceover, and literally they took the footage, the half an hour of raw footage from that first day, and just intercut it with footage from the first three movies, but it's not even all the footage from the first three movies looks terrible. It's like they couldn't even get, and I've actually read that they couldn't get Anchor Bay wouldn't let them use the remastered cuts, but it's one of those things where it's like you couldn't,
and with good reason.
Yeah, this is it looks terrible. The Sleepaway Camp 1 footage looks like terrible VHS. 2 and 3 look about as much as about as good as they did on VHS when I watched them on VHS. I mean, it's a mess. It's a goddamn
mess.
Even with the
breakdown, I'm calling bullshit on the storyline anyway.
Yeah.
Because Allison was not anywhere near parts 1 or 2.
No.
You know, and then throughout this movie, you know, the chick in the bikini who's supposed to be Allison, you know, who she's sitting on a dock in her bikini going, and over there, that's where I recall this happening. And then
right.
They'll show a scene from part 1, and I'm going, bullshit, you weren't there.
Yeah, it's like, I get that the initial idea was, hey, let's, you know, this character will be a character who we never actually saw, but she was there and she saw this stuff. And
but you can't watch part 3 and then expect and know her character from part 3 and then expect people to buy any of that.
Wait, she was
because
in part
3? Because it is the Allison?
Yeah. I don't remember an Allison character being in part 3.
Was she not?
No. As far as I know, this character, Allison, was never actually in any of the movies but this one.
Oh, wait a minute.
Which makes it even worse. Yeah. So, it's...
Okay, never mind. I totally fucked up. That was...
No, it's quite all right.
I was thinking of...
You were thinking of the other...
I was thinking of Marsha.
Yes.
And, oh my God.
Yeah.
See, okay. Well, then that changes everything. But... Okay.
But again, it's still they're trying to set
still
up that
films.
She was at these in these movies and she wasn't.
Well, and you can't even pretend.
No.
Because she maybe she was in the first one and we never saw her. Okay.
Yeah.
But and you know, I guess it's possible she was in the second one and we never saw her.
Mm.
You know, you might be able to get that by.
But there's no way she was in the third
one. There's no way in hell she was in the third one.
And then
no way in hell because you saw every
exactly.
character at camp. Every one of them.
And
there
wasn't there. There's, oh God, the ending of this is so ridiculous. Because it's, again, I read the breakdown. I understand that the twist ending was supposed to be that Allison is really Angela. But it's handled so fucking poorly in this movie that it makes no sense. And I honestly, if I hadn't read the breakdown, I would have been going, what the fuck am I watching? Actually, I was saying that anyway while I was watching this, was what the fuck am I watching? I mean, it runs about an hour and 10 minutes, and I'll give it credit that it doesn't drag because I'm watching footage from the first three movies, so that's kind of nice. And I'll give them credit. There's a couple of editing. There's some edits that work kind of well. I kind of like the reconstructed nightmare sequence where they use the footage from part 2 where Angela's having the nightmare and they're using footage from the first film. I thought that was kind of inventive and kind of cool. Otherwise, this was horrible. This was a fucking train wreck. This was not worth the $1.99 I spent to rent it. I will not be purchasing this, and this will probably never join my collection. As far as I'm concerned, Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor is the fourth disc of half an hour of untouched footage that's in my box set. This movie doesn't exist to me.
I think it would have been a much better, it would have been much better for everyone
if it had just
remained lost.
Yes.
You know, just let it remain lost and leave the mystery.
Yeah.
Because when you try to force something like this, it's not going to
happen.
No,
and I mentioned this to
it's
you,
just not.
That I almost feel like if I would have felt better if they'd said, you know what, we're going to reconstruct Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor, but we're not going to use any of that footage that was shot the first day because, you know, the actors are all either too old for those parts now or whatever. We're going to just, you know, we're going to take the original script and we're going to shoot it with new actors, and then we're going to do it as close to the original vision of what they wanted to do with Sleepaway Camp 4 as we possibly could and release it that way. I would have much preferred that, because as it is now, this is just a mess of random shots and bad voiceover. And
really, I mean, it's real. You've seen the first three films. You've seen this movie. It's just there's nothing. I mean, the wraparound story is not enough to even make it worth it. It just doesn't even exist.
It's the half hour of footage we have from the box set that they tried to make into a coherent wraparound, and that there's not enough there. You know, I mean, I understand. I've tried editing things that were, you know, a chunk of footage that and tried to make it into make sense. It's not easy, But when you've only got a half an hour of footage and you're trying to make it make sense into a cohesive story, wraparound story for something like this, it doesn't work. You know, and yeah, I really wish they had just, you know, said, fuck it, we're going to go with the original script, we're going to reshoot everything, and use, you know, the old footage as, you know, abandon the original Survivor footage and, you know, go with the footage from the first three movies as was originally planned to be done. That would have been fine, and would have been less painful and obnoxious to watch than this, because this, not only was the quality of the old footage bad from the original three movies, but the sound was so wildly off. You'd have scenes that were either too quiet or too loud, and it's like, did nobody go through and fucking mix this thing? So
I don't think so. I really don't think so. That's why I don't. That's exactly why when I hear the phrase "labor of love" attached to this, it really angers me.
Yeah.
Because this was so slapped together and so haphazardly thrown, you can't possibly expect me to believe that anyone loved this,
yeah,
you know, or did this out of love. Because if they did, then they are really, their idea of love is pretty piss poor.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is how you make a tribute to something that you love, then I would hate to see what you do to something you hate.
Yeah, I feel like the heart was in the right place, that because they thought, you know, we're going to give the fans the Lost Sleepaway Camp movie. It's fucking terrible. I can't recommend this. I can't support this. I really wish I hadn't. Honestly, as much as I hate to admit it, if I could have pirated this, I really would have rather done that than have given up my $1.99 for this, because this was fucking worthless. You know, as much as I hate Return to Sleepaway Camp, this is the worst of the franchise. Actually, you know what? This doesn't even count as part of the franchise. This is garbage. This is not a Sleepaway Camp movie.
Yeah, I can't. So, as far as I'm concerned, this doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I deny its existence from here on out. I will never speak of it again.
Yeah.
You can't force me to reveal that I know that it exists,
yeah,
because I won't. But, you know, and I know we're coming off really harsh. And that's because.
And rightfully so.
I stand by that, because we are fans. Mm-hmm. You know, we're true fans of this series. And if you've heard us talking about it, then you know we are. That's why we're doing this retrospective. Yeah. And both of us were hoping to see something promising from this.
Yeah.
And what we got was pretty much kicked in the balls,
yeah,
you know. And every other Sleepaway Camp fan out there would feel exactly the same. I just don't see how you couldn't. Because there was just no effort.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Visible effort.
Yeah, and it's what's even worse is that I looked at the Facebook page for Sleepaway Camp Films, and people have posted pictures of them with their copies of Survivor, and it's just like, really? You've got to be kidding me. You can't actually enjoy this. I'm sorry. Even as from a point of historical value, this is not even that. You know, I mean, I thought going into this, I'd read one negative review of this. It was the only review I read, was somebody had said this was not what it should have been. And I thought, all right, fuck, I'm not going to read any more reviews. I'm just going to go into this open-minded and see what happens. I thought, you know, maybe from a historical point of view, this can be, you know, this will save it. No, this is horrible. Straight beginning to end, this is terrible. This isn't even worth trying to, you know, justify as being a piece of history. It's not. This is terrible. This, honestly, I would have much rather had the mystery of what Sleepaway Camp for the Survivor could have been than what this was, because this was a disaster. I can't tell you to not watch this enough. This is terrible. And like I said, everyone who was involved in the production of this and getting this released should feel fucking ashamed of themselves, because this is just a disaster.
Yeah, it really hurts my feelings. It does. And it was a sad day.
Yeah.
And now I have Return to look forward to.
and in that film's defense, for as bad as that movie is, that one you can at least tell that his heart was in the right place. And even though the writing is terrible, and the special effects aren't great, the acting's not great, at least it tells a cohesive story. and Hiltzik's heart was in the right place. This one, I can see wanting to be the guy who found Sleepaway Camp 4, who gave the world Sleepaway Camp 4, the lost, this, you know, it could, because it's one of those things that I, as a fan of horror films and as a fan of cinema in general, it's that kind of fantasy that we all have of finding that one, you know, lost film. You know, you walk into a garage sale or an estate sale, you happen to find that lost bit of film footage of some movie that's been lost forever, or you find some piece of film history that was thought to be lost, and now you found it, and now you're heralded as the guy who found it. That's, you know, it's a nice dream. It's, you know, but it's, let's be honest here, it's not going to happen every day. You know, the guy who managed to find that he did have a copy of, you know, Edison's Frankenstein sitting in his collection, that's awesome. This is not, no, this is bad. Finding that half an hour of footage that's on the disc that's in the box set, that should have been it. We should have left it at that and just been happy with that and said, you know what, here's a half an hour of footage that, you know, on its own is not very good, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and even when it's cut together as a trailer, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, well, at least it's what we have for what could have been Sleepaway Camp 4. What we have now is fucking terrible. So, yeah.
You know, this is kind of interesting. I was reading before the show on IMDb, on the comments, and someone was talking about how there was conjecture that Allison from this movie was supposed to be Judy from part one. And the reason that she got so angry with the park ranger because he was trying to have sex with her was because she was sealed shut after her unfortunate incident with the curling iron.
Wow. Clearly, like, someone has no idea how human anatomy works. Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, that's honestly,
this is a downer.
This was just miserable. And, you know, and Jamie, even when I started watching this, I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. And she's like, you can stop watching it and I'll tell you what happened. I was like, no, I spent $2 on this fucking movie. I'm going to watch it. So,
and then, like, by the end, he's probably going, damn, I should have taken her up on her offer.
No,
I seriously was willing to let you off the hook. I'm like, just, if you don't want to watch it, if you don't want to finish it, don't. I will fill you in, because trust me, there is not that much to fill you in on.
Journalistic integrity has gotten me into more shit than I like to remember. And this is probably one of the bigger piles that I've fallen into because of my journalistic integrity. So, I can't. There's nothing nice I can say about this movie, honestly. Nothing. This is fucking terrible. It's not worth the $1.99 I spent to rent it. It's not worth the $13.99 that Amazon is charging to buy it.
$13.99?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I feel bad for anyone who spent the money on this.
You're a completist, too.
You're
more so a completist than I am.
Yeah, and like I said,
if I don't like something, I flat out won't own it, you know? But
I hated Return to Sleepaway Camp the one time I saw it, and the only reason I have a copy is because it was a free screener. That's the only reason I have it. Otherwise, I would not own it. And that's how I feel about this one. There's no way I'm going to own this. I won't. I refuse. To anybody who did buy it, I'm sorry. And if you have convinced yourself that you do like this movie and it is good,
I'm sorry about that too.
You know? So, yeah, this is avoid. Avoid this movie at all cost. Even if you are
like Michael Bay was chasing you.
Yeah. Even if you are, you know, a series completist like I am, and you will sit through every bad sequel to a franchise because you love that franchise, this is just going to piss you off. This is just going to make you angry, and, you know, because the only ways to see it are through purchasing it or renting it, because I tried so hard to find a pirated version. It's just not there. So I paid for this movie. I did. I fucking paid.
Because even the pirates aren't fools. They're not going to waste their time on this.
You know what? That says something. If you can't find a movie that's pirated, you know there's something wrong. So that's the end of this fucking madhouse bullshit about this movie. I don't want to talk about it anymore. So we'll be back in just a second.
My feelings are hurt.
Alrighty, folks. So that's it for this week's episode. Next week, we are closing out the Sleepaway Camp franchise. Thank God. With Sleepaway Camp 5, Return to Sleepaway Camp. Yeah.
Which I will be seeing for the first time.
Yes, which is will be interesting because...
I'm excited about that. I am. Yes. But,
and this will be the...
It's because I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
This will be the second time I've seen it because I saw it once when I rented it on DVD and I've never watched it since. It's available on Instant Watch if you guys want to watch it for whatever crazy reason. We also will be doing the film Hell Night for our It Came From the Instant Queue. And yeah, once we wrap up the Sleepaway Camp franchise, who knows what we'll do from there on out. We'll probably do about a month or so of just random fucking movies just to break up the monotony of this goddamn franchise. So yeah, hopefully we've made it clear to you just how fucking terrible The Survivor is and how you should not watch it. I honestly could tell you I had more fun watching the half an hour of footage off the fourth disc in my box set the first time I watched it than I did watching an hour and 10 minutes of garbage. So
well, because with that you had, you know, you could believe that it had potential.
Yeah.
You know, you had your own imagination going. Yeah. And the fanboy in you was able to take it where you wanted it to go.
Exactly.
You know, in this they took it out of your hands and took it where they wanted it to go, and it is not a fun place.
No, it's really not. So yeah, this has been I can't complain too much about this retrospective at this point because it has been fun. You know, I got to rediscover Sleepaway Camp 2 and Sleepaway Camp 3, which still isn't very good, but it's not bad. I regret watching The Survivor. I want my hour and 10 minutes back. I just... But, you know what? I've watched terrible franchise movies before, so whatever. Next week, more news and whatever other random nonsense we happen to come up with. You can contact us. Email, Twitter, on the blog, Facebook, there's the page and the group. Those are all in the show notes, and you will hear the contact info once we're done. And, yeah. Anything else you want to say? I know, I suck at closing out show.
I know, it's just, there you go doing it again. Yeah. He just doesn't want to leave, that's what it is. He loves you guys so much. Thanks everyone for making it through another episode, and please come back and join us next week. Mm-hmm. For more fun.
Yep. So, with that said, we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can email us at CenobiteDave@gmail.com. That's CenobiteDave@gmail.com or Maven1974@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter at D Delamorte. That's at DDELLAMORTE or at Maven1974. You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/devourtheblog or visit the site at devourtheblog.wordpress.com.